Hey y'all, I'm Lynn Winter, a lawyer by day and wife, mom, dance teacher, fitness instructor, and time management expert by all the free time I have made for myself. When returning to big law after maternity leave, I knew I needed to maximize my productivity at work so I could be present for my daughter and husband the moment I walked in the door. So I became obsessed with all things time management and productivity so I could do all the things I had to do plus all the things I wanted to as well. Now I share all my tried and true methods to help you organize your own life while dropping some real life moments in between. Sit back because this is the Life in Motion podcast. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Life in Motion podcast. This is Lynn. I'm super excited for this week's guest. I first met my guest, Emily, because of her sweet little boy. He was in my creative movement class, and we have just grown to have kind of a little friendship, mostly through Instagram and our shared love of her sweet boy. But she is also a licensed professional counselor and one of the co-owners of The Couch Therapy. And so I'm super excited to welcome Emily to the show today. Hi, Emily.
Hey, Lynn. Thanks for having me on. This is really fun. And yes, we have a shared love of Winston.
I know. He's the sweetest ever. I'm like made my Saturdays, especially when he would bring poo or be dressed in the wolf costume. It was the best. I know. So Emily, why don't you tell our guests a little bit more about yourself and what you do?
Yeah. So like Lynn said, I'm Emily Moorhead. I am a licensed professional counselor in the state of Texas, and I am one of the co-owners of The Couch Therapy. And so we offer therapy to women and couples who are just doing life and life is hard. I think that sometimes the stigma of therapy is that you have to be in it because there's this big crisis, but really it can just be that you need support along the way. And so it has been such a passion of mine and for so long to be in therapy, and now to own a therapy practice has been wonderful. My specialties with therapy is working with women and couples, specifically new moms, women who are balancing motherhood, couples who are adjusting to parenthood. And I have a history with infertility. It's actually our struggle to have Winston. And so I also specialize in infertility as someone who has lived it and who has someone who has passion for women who are, you know, struggling through those waters. So holistic practice. It's been really cool. It's been weird. We started it during the pandemic. And so it's been kind of like drinking out of a fire hose.
Yeah, I know. I remember when you were posting about it opening and telling me about it. And I was like, oh, what a great time to start your own business.
Yeah.
But I think probably in the midst of that, it's actually probably been somewhat of a blessing, because I feel like right now, so many women and couples need therapy more than ever, or just somebody to talk to, because we are living in such a strange time right now. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that I planned for our business to take about a year and a half to 2 years to start up, just because it's slow to build a therapy practice. Mm-hmm. And we filled up our client loads, both of us, in literally 2 months, because people need help. And it's just, living every day is hard and different. And so new normals are weird to get adjusted to. And so it's been really cool to have the opportunity to sit and, you know, witness people's stories and journeys during this really, I mean, wild time that we're living in.
Yeah, I know. I feel like therapy has become less stigmatized during this whole COVID thing, because I think more people have realized that, like, your mental health, like, it's real. Like, there really is such a thing as taking care of yourself. And when we were just pretty much kind of trapped, and suddenly for a lot of people, they're trapped in a home with a spouse that they maybe hadn't spent that much time with ever in the last few years. Or, you know, for me personally, I mean, I was home with Evelyn for 12 plus hours a day, which we've never spent that much time. I think people realize that, oh, I need an outlet and I have to take care of myself. So I'm hoping that if, you know, some of the good things that come out of it is that people realize that, you know, therapy isn't just when something has gone wrong, but it's really just part of your normal self-care routine.
Absolutely. And therapy is really accessible right now. That's the cool thing, I guess, about insurance companies and COVID is copays are being waived right now. Telehealth is just accessible. Like, I have people nursing their babies during sessions. I have people in their jammies in bed, like drinking a cup of coffee. Like, it is accessible. It's in your home. And so it's made us all kind of even rethink the way that therapy is supposed to even look, which has been really cool.
Yeah, it's been fun to just, I mean, as much as you can say fun, but to see where I've seen a lot more of my friends who are moms who have really reached out and asked for recommendations or who do you see, because they've suddenly realized that I really do have to take care of my mental health and it is okay that it has to be somebody else, that, you know, impartial third person who can just really, I can say whatever I want to and there's no judgment.
Yes.
So it's been really nice. So what I'm really interested in, though, because of your focus really in like new moms and couples coming through into motherhood, is I really want to talk about what you kind of give advice for. What are the common things that you see new parents and new moms coming to you for? And what is like your best advice and stuff that you offer to them?
So this is lived experience. I remember, you know, it was so hard to get pregnant with Winston. We had so many bumps in the road. And so when he came into this world and he, I mean, you know this, like he has a voice, like he has a voice and an opinion. And it started from day one. He was a super, super, super hard baby. He had reflux and just felt terrible. And so he cried the majority of the day. And I remember like scrolling mindlessly through Facebook and not seeing anyone talk about how hard motherhood was. Like, it was so embarrassing. And I felt like I was the only person that was having a hard time, like every single day. And really just was looking in all of these spots in my life and never really heard anyone normalize like this new adjustment of motherhood being as difficult as it was. And so I think for my interest and my love in working with parents really is like normalizing that this is hard, that your entire life has changed and that it's not always picture perfect and that it's not always, you know, your kids like perfectly groomed and well-dressed and well-behaved, that it is messy and sticky and hard. And it doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong. I think that we praise parents all the time on living so selflessly, when really sometimes it builds into the culture of moms and dads not taking care of themselves because they're so proud of, I'm not sleeping through the night and I am sacrificing my whole life. And it is so sacrificial that we forget how to take care of ourselves in the trenches. And that's when we just like have an empty cup that we can no longer pour from.
Yeah, I feel like it's almost like this badge of honor to be that super stressed out mom who's like, I was up at 1 a.m. and 3 a.m. and then I was pumping, but also breastfeeding and I'm running everywhere and look at me. And I'm like, but are you happy and are you healthy? Like, I don't understand at what point we went from, you know, what my mom talks about and how, you know, she raised me when she was little to this badge honor of busyness and stressed out. I just don't know where that, you know, change happened, but I hate that it has, that women feel like they literally have to do it all to be seen as successful in motherhood.
Absolutely. And I mean, I remember like being proud of myself for those things, right? Like being proud of all of these things that were driving me into a hole. And it wasn't until I realized like I couldn't care for him unless I was caring for myself. And it was the first time that that really hit home for me of like, whoa, like you are at a deficit and this is impacting him because you're not caring for yourself. And so it was this huge mind shift. And like you said, there's not a lot of reflection of it. Like moms aren't talking about it. We are talking about how proud, you know, of these like hard, hard, hard moments, but not how hard it is for us. And so I think the shift is where that comes in.
Yeah, I can remember, I mean, very vividly when Evelyn was a newborn. I mean, had been working in Big Law at a big Dallas law firm, and suddenly I went from that atmosphere to alone in a house with a newborn with nobody to talk to all day and feeling like I needed to do all of these things. And I went, remember one day just looking at myself and I was like, I can't tell you the last time I showered or brushed my teeth or slept, and I haven't a talk to an adult in what seems like days. And I just can remember feeling so, I mean, very dark. And I was like, this cannot be what it's supposed to be like. Like, where is this Instagram, Pinterest, where these women had like strapped on babies and they're perfect baby wearing and they're out at Target. And I'm like, this is not what I'm doing. And I can remember that so vividly. And having a really good friend come over whose baby is exactly 1 year older to the day as Evelyn. And she was like, Lynn, it's all a lie. She was like, it's a lie. She goes, it is hard and messy. And she was like, and if you need to let her cry and go in your closet and just block it out, like I do it. And
Absolutely.
it was like, it was hearing somebody else admit that I gave myself permission to stop trying to have this like picture perfect motherhood. And it's when I said, I think I'm suffering from postpartum depression and I really need to talk to somebody about it. But it was funny, it took somebody else telling me that their story for me to feel like it was okay to not feel like I was doing it all. And I just hate that women feel like that they just don't feel on their own, like it's enough to just say, this is hard and messy and I need help.
Well, and I remember saying that to a friend. Like, we had tried to go be social, and like, he just cried the whole way to being social. And like, it was just, it spent hours trying to get out of the house. And I just was so discouraged. And I remember going over there and being like, this is really hard. And they said to me, like, oh, I bet you have postpartum depression. And it was like, hang on, can't I just say this is hard? Like, one, you don't have the credentials to diagnose me. And two, I can say it's hard without you diagnosing me with something. I need you just to be with me in it instead of trying to fix it for me. And yes, like looking back now, I actually do think that I probably had some postpartum depression, definitely some postpartum anxiety. But really and truly, it was even when you're having someone who struggles, like how you even speak to them about that struggle, right? Like,
Oh my gosh,
oh, you
yes.
must be struggling, so it must be this. Like, you are just not, doing well. And it's like, hang on, like, what if it's you are like, this is hard. You are having a hard time, and that is normal. What do you need? Like, how can I support you? Because casseroles only go so far for so long.
I know. It's funny that you say where people want to automatically diagnose new mothers with postpartum depression because I had this happen with my mother-in-law. They came to visit. Evelyn was about a month old, and we went upstairs and I was changing her diaper and I hadn't slept. I was 100% pumping because Evelyn just would not take the breast. And so I was exhausted. And my mother-in-law looking at me and go, oh, I think maybe that you have postpartum depression. And it took all of my power not to, I know it sounds bad, like punch her in the face. Because it was like, what I really just need is someone to say, like, I see you. I know this is hard because I raised two boys and let me take the baby and you go take a nap. Like, and I think that it's frustrating for when we just need that acknowledgement of, yeah, like sometimes motherhood sucks, but you're doing okay. What can I do for you? And I tell a lot of my friends now who have babies, I'm like, can I come stay up overnight and you can sleep? Like that was the best thing I ever had anybody do for me. Was let me sleep. And so I wish more women and people in general were just supportive of whatever it is that we need and how we're feeling and don't rush to judge us. I'm sure that you hear that a lot. Like, oh my God, I feel like I'm judged, or if I'm not doing this, I'm not doing it right. And I don't know how we get over that our self judgment of each other.
Well, and I think it really is, I mean, you and I are Instagram friends. I literally run my Instagram of the idea that my kid during the pandemic has not worn shorts, but like one day out of the whole like
I
quarantine, like just underwear, right? But someone actually messaged me the other day, and they told me, they were like, thank you for being an honest mom, right? Like publicly, you know, my kids are not, you know, going to like fit these idyllic Pinterest pictures that I thought they would. Like we are a hot mess and we are trying our best and there's a lot of love here, but there's also a lot of mess. And so it's, I'm not just going to post these perfect moments. I'm going to tell the whole story, obviously protecting my kids' safety and identities and things like that. But really and truly, like, how do I run a life of authenticity? So when someone is in the trenches, you know, they would know that I was a safe person to be like, hey, this is hard, right? Like, and feel safe in that conversation instead of diagnosed or judged. And I mean, in therapy, a lot of times, like even when you were just describing, like, I left corporate America and was home alone without friends and it was quiet and the baby just cried. Like,
yes.
When you look black and white that and bring the reality of course that was hard. Your entire life changed. Like your entire life has been imploded upon and someone has a need from you 24/7. Like that is a whole different world. And so even when you bring just that affirmation, that knowing, that seeing, it changes the game for the person who is feeling so vulnerable and so alone. And it changes the idea that you do have to be perfect to be a good mom.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that was the biggest thing I had to realize, that it was okay for me to admit that I don't necessarily love motherhood all the time. Like, and I felt so bad. Like really one time I finally was talking to a friend and I was like, I don't love being a mom. Like Evelyn, I love her and I love raising her, but I realized like she is not my end all be all. Like,
I had people fulfill every need for you.
Yeah. But I had people criticize me for that, for like admitting that like I don't necessarily love being a mom all the time and that like my child, you know, doesn't always come first and that's okay. But I was judged. And I think our society does that. If we don't die on that sword of motherhood selflessness, then suddenly we are, you know, neglecting our children or we're being selfish. And I hate that stigma. And I've gotten to the point where I'm like, you know, I'm going to live authentically too. Like when Evelyn pretty much almost flooded our house, like, you know, I was like, this is my reality. A whole like,
This is what it is.
And that's okay. And here's what we did and we dealt with it. And it does, it's just what it is. It's life. And I think that the more people, and especially women and working women as well, can show that like, it's okay to sometimes put work before your children, or it's okay to put your marriage before your children or yourself. Like that is also being, that's your own mental health and well-being, and that's okay.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, when I struggled with infertility, a few of us got pregnant at the same time and all kind of like joined this moms group together because we all had similar traumas and were bonded through that. And I remember out of like, I don't know, 6 or 7 girls, I was the only one that went back to work. And I remember feeling so shamed by it, but also felt like I had this weird secret of like, I am a better mom when I'm working. Like,
yes,
and that
yes.
is my truth. And it was not all of their truths, right? But it felt like so shameful at first. And then when I went back to work and I did get in the swing of things and I did remember who Emily was outside of like Winston's mom or Baker's mom, like it felt really inspiring. And that's not everyone's truth. And I don't want to put that judgment on everyone, but for my journey, that was my truth. And that's actually why I feel so connected to you, is that, you know, on social media, like I'm trying to live authentically and I'm watching you, and you are one of the people that I actually feel very mentored by in, I can work, I can feel passionate about my work, I can have different interests, and I can still love my kiddo with every single thing in me, that it can, it can be coexisting.
I do. And I think it's, you know, one of the things I talk about is people always like, well, Lynn, you just seem to have this whole work-life balance thing figured out. And I'm like, the work-life balance, that is a lie that people tell us. It is not a balance, because there's no way. What do you do that? Is it every hour, every day? Is it over a year? And so I really tell people, it's really about an alignment. It's where your work life, whatever that is, if you are a stay-at-home mom, that's your job, that's your work, and your life, meaning who you are outside of all of that, where it aligns for you and it feels good and you're
Absolutely.
filling your cup enough that you can be the best wife, mom, worker, but you haven't lost yourself in the
Right.
mix of it. And so I try to tell people, like, get away from this sense that, like, there's some sort of balance or secret. Like, it's just where you feel fulfilled. That is the magic of it. And that you have to tell people, like, it's okay to schedule time to just be, Emily, or to just be Lynn.
Yeah.
And because I do all these other things, and people go, but I mean, doesn't your husband get neglected, or your daughter, or these things? And I was like, no, because by me fulfilling my life with all these other things I'm super passionate about, it allows me to be a better wife and mom, because then I'm so much more strategic with my time, but I'm filling their cups from my full cup. And
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
amazing when you have that mindset shift, and you stop feeling guilty for doing things that don't revolve around your child or your partner in life or whatever it is.
I totally agree. And I think that that is like truthful for working moms, for stay-at-home moms, for moms who do both. Like it can be truthful. It's just trying to find the time to figure out who is Lynn, who is Emily, and like what does fill my cup, which is such a, it's such a message that doesn't align with how our culture talks about motherhood.
No, and not at all. No, it doesn't. It's so funny. So I am also interested because you do, I know you work with couples who are, coming into parenthood together.
Yes.
And I know one of the biggest struggles for me was, my husband, he had never been around children before. I mean, Evelyn was the very first baby who he had ever held. He had just never been around children. And so she was like this alien foreign concept to him.
They are
And
weird
I
aliens.
know they are. But then to like add this new stage of life where we both went from like super, focused on work to now having this thing that needed us 24/7. And for my husband, who had never even really been around children, it was so hard for him and he struggled in it. And I struggled with him because, you need that support from your partner. And I forgot, oh my gosh, like, he's struggling too. Not only has my, world been rocked, but his world's been rocked too. So I'm interested in how you see that and how you talk to couples going through something similar.
Well, I mean, it's so interesting. So I remember, I mean, when I was in my undergrad, I was in a marriage and family class, and they talked about the highest risk in Texas, and it's national now, but the highest risk in Texas for divorce, it was a marriage initiative I was working with, was when you had a child in the home under the age of 5. Because all of the caretaking that you have to do day in and day out, and you can quickly become roommates and quickly can lose your marriage. And so I clung to that statistic out of fear of, of like, oh my gosh, like I'm engaged. Like I have always wanted to be a mom. Like, but also I love Brayden, who's my husband, and like want to be a wonderful wife to him. And so I think it really is for couples, there's a foundation that you have in any relationship. And I'm a Gottman marriage therapist, but it's friendship and communication. And that is the foundation of every relationship. Everything else is building blocks on those pieces, but those are foundational. And so I think in the early trenches of parenthood, whether it's newborn days or toddler days, like whatever it is, it really is, are we communicating? Are we checking in on each other? Are we believing that we have the best interest in one another? And are we still trying to find fun together? And are we being intentional about that? And then everything else builds from that, and really and truly, Gottman therapy is really cool because we have like this online assessment for couples that takes like an hour and a half to complete, but it tells you every single thing that you could want to know about a couple. So you get to just really dive into the counseling piece of it. But it really is for my parents who are new parents, it's that communication piece that you become so focused on this child's needs that you stop checking on each other's needs. And you stop asking for help and you stop believing you deserve help. And it just becomes this like hole that we dig with one another. And so, my husband and I both had very different bonding experiences, both very different experiences in becoming parents. But at the end of the day, first baby, we wanted to pretend like everything was fine. Second baby, it was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible, isn't it? Right? It was like, let's just talk about it. Let's just be honest. There's no judgment. It's safe here. This is hard. And out of believing that we both were trying our very best, there was this security in true black and white honesty of, this is hard. I need help. Can you help me with this need? And believing that we both wanted to support each other in that. And so helping couples really start to communicate about those needs and communicate even about the need we were talking about of, I'm losing myself. How do I find her? You know, and believe that you are worthy of that.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that's something, you know, my husband and I, we struggled with that for a long time was, well, who are we now that we're parents? Like now suddenly we weren't Lynn and Jason anymore. We were Evelyn's mom and dad. And yes. I think that that identity crisis for both of us was super, super hard. But I think my husband was almost to the point where he was like, oh, but I shouldn't be. And I should be this kind of dad. And I should be totally in love with my child. But it was very hard for him because he was like, I don't know what she wants. She can't talk to me. I've never mm-hmm. been around babies. And so he felt uncomfortable. And that's when I came in, just swooped in. I was like, okay, well, I've got to keep everything going. And so I'll just do it. And then I realized, but what I was doing was making him feel like he wasn't important and wasn't needed. And it took us, you know, a while to kind of get in this flow of the fact that like, I do need him and he needs to know that I need him, but also that it's okay to admit that like, I don't know what I'm doing and I don't want to lose myself. And that took us a while. And I think one of the best things that we did, and we still do it to this day, is we have a standing a weekly date night, whether we use it or not, it's there. We always have it in case we want to do it, but we also both have our own night to ourselves. So, you know, every Tuesday night is like my night. I can do whatever it is that I want. So that's usually when I do like happy hours with my girlfriends or things that I want to do. And that's when Evelyn and, you know, Jason, they have their night. They do their thing together. So then on Wednesdays, that's his night to go do what he needs to do and that kind of stuff. And I have my date night with Evelyn. And I think what that's done for us is allowed us to continue to have permission to be our own people. But then we get to come back and have our time together. And I think that's realizing that and getting into that flow was so hard for us. But once we got there, we realized, oh, this is what we needed. But it took a lot of hard and awkward conversations to get there.
Well, and I love also like the message that gives Evelyn of like, mom gets to have friend time. Mom is her own person. Dad gets to have friend time. Dad's his own person. Also look at them. They're going on a date, right? Like the holistic message of moms don't just have to bleed, that mom can have joy. Mom can have interests outside of me. Because I think about like the humans that we want to raise are people that believe that their voice matters, believe that their interest matters, believe that who they are matters, and that it's not tied to parenthood or a husband or a wife or whatever it is, that it can actually, those things can all live together with good balance. And through awkward, hard conversations. I think it's good for kids to see those. It's good for kids to see resolve. It's good for parents, you know, to model that, because it's something that you can't really teach. It's something they have to see, which I think is really cool that she has the opportunity to see that.
Yeah. And it's even happened. I mean, speaking back to what we did at the beginning about COVID and this whole, you know, stay at home order, you know, before my husband and I both worked outside of the home, Evelyn was, you know, in daycare or she was at school. And suddenly now she had no school. My job was a little more flexible. So I became the work from home parent. My husband's job ramped up and was gone even more. And, you know, he would get home and I'd be so frustrated because I felt like I was doing three jobs, you know, pre-K teacher, lawyer, and mom. And I was like, you've just been out there just doing your regular old thing. Nothing's changed. And he would come home and be so exhausted that I'd be like, no, I need to check out. And I realized, well, yeah, you have taken on something different, but he also has too. He's taken on this stress of what happens if, you know, I'm doing well, but that, you know, what if Lynn gets furloughed or what if something changes? And I had to realize that he was internalizing these things. And so, yeah, he got home and he was exhausted at the end of the day too. And so we had to, again, have this conversation of I need support and, you know, what that looked like. And I realized I needed to specifically tell him, here's what I need from you. Because yes. I assumed, okay, I need, you know, when you get home, I need you to, you know, parent. Well, he didn't really know what that meant. And so I got frustrated, but I realized, no, I had to say, I need you to step in. And if she asks for a snack, say, let me get that for you. Or say, you know what, mommy needs to go take a walk. Like, I need you to intercept her 18 million questions, mm-hmm. because by the time you've gotten home, I'm exhausted. And I forgot, like, how that communication with my husband worked, that he needs those specific things to feel successful. And that always feels awkward for me, because I'm like, but you should just know.
Yes.
But it took a lot of time for us. And when I was very, you know, I spelled out exactly what I needed, I realized it made him feel good, because he knew exactly what I needed. And I was getting at the same time what I needed as well. And so we always have to go back to that, this communication plan of, okay, what's going on? How do you need to hear things? How do I need to receive things and to move forward? And I think, but a lot of couples, it just gets scary because everyone gets defensive, or they yes. feel guilty for saying, I need help. I think women, we feel guilty. And I had just had to say, like, I can't do this, because I'm going to end up in the loony bin, is really what I told him.
Yeah. I mean, we just had to do so many check-ins too, because of like, because I'm subconsciously like taking in all of this and not asking for help. And then I like mm-hmm. act a fool and like lash out, and I'm angry yes. and I'm saying mean things. And it's like, really and truly, if I had just asked for what I was needing, which was like to go to the bathroom, wouldn't it be so nice, instead of like blowing up 10 hours later. And so, I mean, constant check-ins, constant like, hey, how did this week's schedule work for you? Mm-hmm. Did, you know, my 5 o'clock appointment send you over the edge with wrapping up work on time? Like, what do we need? And it's this really cool, like, I think almost spectrum of forcing us to all communicate a little bit, because
yes.
it has changed our normals. And so, you know, those check-ins, I think, are oil changes in our marriages. It's not a full-blown tune-up, right? It's not something, right. And I think that that's what people think about with marriage counseling, is like, oh, it has to be that like there was an affair, or, you know, that we're about to get divorced. And it's not what it is. It's, are you having a hard time communicating? What skills can we build in to make everything feel safe, and where both partners feel like their voice deserves to be heard? So then the big moments, you know, don't happen. And doing it over and over and over again, like you described.
Yeah. And because I think that was one of the big things that we learned when we did our premarital counseling, when we started there, was we have two different communication styles. Mm-hmm. We have two different love languages. We are probably complete opposite Enneagrams. And my husband thought it was so dumb that I wanted us to do all of these things. But I said, you know, I had a failed marriage before, and yeah. it was because we couldn't communicate. And, you know, and I said, I don't want that. So I want to know everything that it is about us, and how we love, and how we show love, and how we communicate, and how we're going to fight. I mean, we set down ground rules for how we would argue, because communication was so important to me. And even to this day, sometime when I start flying off the handle, you know, my husband will look at me and he'll go, Lynn, that's not how we agreed to do things. Yeah. And it's that check, but it's still hard because he is not a feelings person. That's just not where he comes from, and I am. And so I'm just like, I need you to emote. What are you yes. feeling? And yeah. I have to remember, for him, when I do that, that makes him close down. And I think for families, especially during this time, and especially when you have kids, like, you stop talking to each other. You just talk at each other. And so it's been very hard for us, but I think we've also done a pretty good job once we have gotten there to remember that. But I think in general, if people did marriage counseling more, like you said, is like those oil changes, then perhaps we wouldn't get to the point where now they show up on your doorstep because they're about to get a divorce, and someone has said, well, maybe you all should try counseling, right. you know?
And it's like a last resort thing, right? Yeah, where there's not a lot of room to grow in those moments, right? It's right. when you're in the last resort. But if you can build into it of like, hey, we want to speak to each other with kindness. We want to honor each other's like dreams and values. How do we do this? Because it's not natural. We all came from different parenting styles. We all parent different. We all live different. We all have different values. And put that together in a house plus COVID, and woo, you got a combo.
Hey, have you ever wondered how I look like I'm doing it all? How I manage all of the things? Well, if you've been around long enough, you'll know that time management and productivity and being able to live a calm and balanced life is my A number one goal in life. But it is also my A number one goal for any other woman. So if you're interested in learning how I do all the things, how I manage my time, then head on over to my website, www.lynnmwinter.com, to find out how you can work one-on-one with me.
You do. I do. I think that it's just so much, but if people would just stop and say, hey, you know, if I'm willing to go for myself because I'm feeling stressed, if our marriage is feeling stressful or just the situation at home is stressful, maybe if we just sit down with somebody and say, hey, here's where we're both coming from. And for some reason we are like ships passing in the night, like what can you tell us to help us communicate better so that even if we're still ships passing in the night, we know how to communicate and show love to each other in a way that when someday, hopefully soon, this kind of all blows over, our marriage stays intact or our partnership or wherever you are. I wish more people would do that.
Well, I mean, my husband and I, when we were diagnosed with infertility, like the next day I made a counseling appointment and he was like, is there something wrong? Are we okay? Mm-hmm. You know, you should have known he married a counselor, but I was like, yes, we're fine. And I want us to stay fine. Right. And we are about to go through a giant spiral of grief and failures and fears and building a family, all these really hard conversations. Wouldn't it be nice if someone helped us navigate those kindly with respect and with like letting us both hear each other? And so, you know, it was like six sessions of, let's really process this grief and make sure that we're both, you know, in safe places with each other and with our vulnerability and, you know, let's be in and out. And it really was that oil change to help us through a really grief stricken pattern. And I think even in motherhood, like going back to how can we check in with each other? How can we ask, you know, how the partner's doing? It doesn't have to just be in these COVID moments or these, you know, these new adjustments to parenthood. It really can be, are you going through grief? Are you going through loss? Did you lose your job? Did you lose a parent? Like, are you having relationship difficulties? And looking at it the same way that we have with COVID of like, how can I adjust to make sure that you feel like you and I feel like me and that our lives can live with harmony, right? Of that checking in and caring enough to do that.
Yeah. I think it's so important. I love what you said. It's just that checking in. And I think it goes also to not only in our relationships with our partners in life, but also I've realized that with just like my friendships. I've made such a concerted effort to reach out to some of my friends who I know, like some of them have not left their houses since March, and just saying, hey, how are you? How are you dealing? What can I do for you? Is there something I can bring you? And a lot of times, you know, they get taken aback. They're like, oh, I'm fine. I'm like, no, but really, are you? Because you haven't left your house since March and you've got three kids under five at home, right. You know? And so I think it's that too. It's being not afraid to just reach out to people and just say, I see you. And I think even then, like, even if they don't ask you for anything, I've realized that just that reaching out and checking on people, it goes it miles for them.
I remember my son was in the hospital and one of my girlfriends like got in touch with my sister and was like, can you put a house key under the mat for Emily and Brayden? And I'm going to clean their house. And she had all of our favorite snacks when we got home from the hospital. And like, it was just this like really smooth transition when we got home and we didn't ask for it. Right. Like, I know what I would have needed in crisis. And so I'm just going to do it for you. Or I'm going to say, do you want lasagna or do you want a pizza on your front porch at 7 o'clock? Yeah. Like, I'm just going to make this conscious decision for you because I know you need it. How can I fill that gap? I see you. And the I see you weighs so much more than the actual, you know, gift or, you know, whatever you're doing for them. Yes. Really is. It's like, you're not alone. This is how I feel like I can help you through it. And I can let you know that like, this is hard and you're not going to do this by yourself. I will be with you in it.
Yeah. I know. And even for people who have said like, oh no, I don't need anything. And I'm like, well then, if all else, like I'm thinking of you, if you do think of something, then I'm here for you. Like I realize how far that goes to just make a mother or a friend feel seen. 'Cause I think at the end of the day, that's a lot of what we want. We want to be seen outside of so and so's mom. We need to be seen as that woman that we were before all of this happened, this motherhood or anything that happened. I think that's one of the biggest things that women continue to crave, is find it. They say, well, I lost myself. And I always want to say, you haven't lost anything. You're still there. It's just finding what that looks like now with this, amoeba that has fed off of you for 9 months and stolen from you. And so just being seen, it's hard, but I think the more we are open and honest with each other and we talk more about our struggles publicly, and openly, it will become a more normal thing, I hope, where people don't feel like they have to suffer in silence.
Absolutely. I read yesterday, and it's like still just like a pit in my stomach, that the new moms right now that are having babies during a global pandemic, the typical rate of like postpartum depression is around 9-10% in new moms. Right now it's 41.5% because the isolation, the loneliness, and it was a study of 900 moms that did have birth, during this time. But I just think about like all of these people, who are adjusting to new normals during this time, and like how we can just, check in on them and remind them that therapy is normal and remind them that suffering is normal, but they're not alone in it. These small things that create in them, I deserve to be cared for. I deserve to have a voice. I deserve to know who Lynn is or who Emily is. Like reminders of that, because I think our generation just gets away from that so much at times that it is a nice way to put in next to someone of like, you deserve this. You are worthy of your voice and knowing yourself aside from all the other pieces that make you you.
Yes, I love that. Well, Emily, I have loved, loved, loved talking to you today.
And just like that, it's another episode of the Life in Motion podcast. If you've enjoyed today's episode and would like to know more, head to the show notes where you can find links to everything that we discussed today, as well as even more information. As always, if you're looking for more ways to increase your productivity and find time to do the things that you love, you can head over to www.lynnmwinter.com and join our community.